Let's open up to the blessing of being in the refuge, being on this path of awakening. If you can, then play with this this interesting connection between outside and inside, refuge outside, refuge inside, because that will be very helpful on the path of practice to integrate outer phenomena with inner awareness. Sangyin Chidan Sogyin Chonam Lan Chanjom Padu Dane Kyab Suji Dagyin Chin Soen Chin Pesanam Ji Jolam Penjia Sangyin Jom Pasho Sangye Chedan Sangye Chonam La Janjom Padu Dane Kyab Sunchi Dagin Jin Soen Jin Pesanam Jin Jolam Penjia Sangye Jom Paisho Sangye Chedan Sangye Chodam La Janjom Padu Dane Kyab Surji Dagi Jin Soen Jin Pesanam Ji Jola Penchia Sangye Jom Paisho Sem Chantam Jende Vandam Deve Judan Dempa Jurji Dunnay Dun Dunnay Ji Judan Dewa Jurji Dhuna mempa deva dhamma dhammenja vajruji Nidin chandan nidan dravetanam chempa la nempa chunji Padan savela marimpochi Dagi chi vom pede den shula Kajin chen pungo ne je son te Kusun to ging a drum saldo sa Already by tomorrow after lunch, we will be going back into, well, you will be going back into probably your home, your normal situations. I will be traveling still 2 more days, then going home. And wherever we are in the world, actually, we are always faced with this task of integrating all of what we learn in meditation, all of what we learn in these more relaxed, protected times, contemplative life, how to integrate that with our so-called daily life. Actually, daily life has been continuing all the way through the retreat. It has never left us. It was just challenging in a different way. It wasn't even less challenging. So, of course, we can talk about the meditative composure, the contemplative way of dealing with daily life. But again, I want to invite you to share with me how our deep understanding of reality, how that will help us to live our daily life. You know, we are talking about reality. What is reality? Several times in this retreat we have been sharing, I've been sharing with you about that. Remember that slightly more structured teaching about conditioned aspects of reality, the more imaginary kinds, which are also conditioned, and then their true nature, which is their ungraspable ultimate reality. But this is not all of what we can say. You know, this is just giving us a taste that whatever we encounter has this ungraspable touch to it, which doesn't make it unreal. Still, people, when they hear this about the ungraspable nature, sometimes called the empty nature, still they feel like it's a denial of reality. It is not. This is real, what's happening here and what's happening out there in the world, and wherever we feel and hear news, you know, there is reality going on. What this teaches us, this view, is that within that reality, there are many realities. There are as many realities as there are people living in that situation. It's not one experience. And then this is already easy to understand. Yeah, it's like as many people as we are here in the room, as many experiences of this situation now we have. And this you can transport into the happy and the difficult situation of your life. So already that. To know that it is dynamic and that it is not solid means that we know, the moment we experience it, we know, okay, now I get these news. Now I see these pictures. Now I'm being touched in my heart. I could cry. And all of this, what I experience now, depends very much how I deal with it, how this mind is actually working with this reality. It is, this reality is flowing through me. So it's making me resonate with all these different feelings. And one way we already talked about is that we know that we can co-create reality with others by what we give intention to, where our energy goes, where and inside ourselves, whether we tend to go more to the difficult suffering aspects, whether we go more to the encouraging aspects within the same situation. You know, there's constant choices of awareness. And these choices, they are not made by a self. Most of it is habitual forces. They immediately choose our preferred way of experiencing and looking at reality. And then wisdom, compassion, they can make us see, oh, not so helpful. And then other options are there. And as we explore other options, you know, this we need this capacity that we developed in meditation to keep our awareness, attention, mindfulness in an undistracted way there where we want to have it. And this is like, okay, stabilizing our attention. So we can choose to stabilize it in this field, in that aspect, in that aspect. But mostly when we talk about daily life, we feel like victims of our daily life. We feel like we are being drawn into our daily life because we do not exercise the choice of awareness anymore. Yeah, there is not, we do not use the capacity of also staying with other aspects of reality that usually don't receive so much of our attention. So, for example, myself, I meet so many nice people, so wonderful contact, but then it's also very important that when I come home, one of the first things I will do is I will switch on the news. I want to know what's going on. I want to know, and I will go for the more difficult subjects in this world, and I want to see what has been happening. I want to see the stupidity of the world. I want to see the suffering. I want to be in contact. But then I also know enough is enough. Yeah. Then also the capacity to say, hey, and now again, you have your confirmation that samsara hasn't changed so much. Yeah, while you were on retreat, you know, the miracle is still missing. So we still have pretty much the same things going on. And I choose to focus on that I'm still breathing, that the sun is still rising, and that the birds are still singing, and that I have lovely people around me. Yes, so, but it's been my practice to alternate. So I'm someone, and it's part of my practice as being also a teacher, who in times when I'm not teaching retreats, then I usually enter the news daily, but not like an addict going from one to the next, but knowing what I'm going for, searching for the sources, and then limiting it to that, not being pulled, you know, into the next. And because that has also happened to me, of course. Huh? Then I start with this, and then I suddenly finish up watching a football game. You know, it's like, okay, has happened because I was a football addict before in my young age. Yes? And so like these tendencies, they can take over. But then we have maybe tendencies to stay with the suffering. And also this is a tendency. We prefer to take all the suffering in and like having it all happening in our heart, and we forget the other side. And it's as if we cannot be joyful anymore. And this is a dilemma. It's a dilemma very much here in this land, you know, a very much big dilemma, because how to be joyful with all of this going on? It's like a big dilemma. And so what we have been practicing here is actually an art. I could only show you a little bit, but it's an art of flowing into different areas of reality, different aspects of reality, not privileging one area over the other areas, not privileging the outer news to the needs of our children, to the needs of the plants, to the daily touchdown, you know. And actually what I'm talking about is, hey, how to integrate what we practice in retreat is actually continue to flow in this multi-layered, multi-dimensional reality, which is ours. The Dharma makes it all too simple when we talk about six sense fields. You know, six sense fields, this is a classical teaching, you know, the five outer senses and the mental sense. But then already the Mahayana Abhidharma subdivides the mental into the mental perception, into the emotional mind and the alaya consciousness, which is the dualistic ground perception, seeing things from a subjective point of view, separate from the rest of the world, but very subtle. And this ground consciousness, this dualistic ground consciousness, can actually loosen up. And then this is what we call alaya, the ground itself. This is the same as the ground Mahamudra. So already, when you go for that kind of description, then the sixth sense, the mental sense, you have three which are still functioning in the dualistic way: the perceiving mind, the emotional mind, and the dualistic ground, the habitual tendencies of the very basic unconscious. And then you have the awakened, the purified ground. But again, this model does not include so many subtleties. So many subtleties. You know, it's like we say it's the emotional mind, but in the so-called emotional mind, there is the thinking emotional mind and there is the non-conceptual emotional mind. Non-conceptual means not thinking in the normal way. There's not sentences. There are no words. There is so much feeling going on. Look now, feeling going on, feeling the atmosphere in this room. We cannot put words on it, but there is a feeling. Okay? And there is a feeling as our eyes meet. There's a feeling there. And we are reading a little bit in the eyes of each other and in the facial expression. So there is a not only a feeling, but a reading going on. But this is non-conceptual. We don't put words. Sometimes a word comes. Oh, that looks like this and this. But we are reading reality in so many ways. So look, we talk about the visual sense, which is pretty much seeing. But as I'm now looking into your eyes and you into mine, then there is a visual reading, which is an emotional reading, but also an experiential reading. It compares to all the other facial expressions that I have experienced in my life, and it tries to organize that. What would that expression in your face mean? And I see it changing while we talk, and it changes now even more. You are aware of it, and mine as well. So we see, we are actually, let's call this little part of reality, let's just call it face reading, yeah, just to give it a name. It is a multi-layered process of what happens when we look into a face. It connects us with so many faces that we have looked into. The stories that we hear and read, they connect us with so many experiences that we have heard about and that we have lived through. So there is the whole time, there is a biographic reading of our reality. Whatever we encounter, we compare with our past experiences. An incredible reading of reality. And this is not done by the thinking, the normal conceptual thinking mind. It is much quicker. It is in split seconds. It is already happening. I look into your face already. Before I can talk, I have a feeling of what might be going on there. Yes, complete interpretation. Not sure whether it is really going on. My feeling about what your expression might mean. I could be completely wrong. I could be close to reality, but it will never be exactly what the person is experiencing. That much I can be sure. There's no total match. It's always an intuitive, experiential reading of reality. And then we have so many. Just go into the sounds now. How, without even consciously being aware of it, the sound level of the surrounding sounds that we don't give meaning, but how they still influence our stress level, how they influence how good we feel in a place. Just think about the colors in a place, how they influence our being. Think about the body reading of reality. There's not only, there's of course temperature, there's texture, but there are physical senses that with closed eyes or with open eyes, you can sense that someone is behind you. What kind of sense is that? It's not included in the normal list of senses. We can sometimes sense what a person wants to say. And then it comes. What kind of sense is that? There are so many. I want to open everyone here. I want to open us to a multidimensional understanding of reality. All of this is dynamic. Okay, that's its ultimate nature. Dynamic means it is not graspable, but it is real. Okay. In German, we have this word for real means wirklich. And wirklich in German is something which has a Wirkung, which has an effect. Real means to us something is real if it has an effect. And yes, indeed. All of this has effects. In that way, it is real, right? It is effective. So the Dharma word for that, it is karmic. There's karma means cause and effect. Everything has effects. So there are karmic forces, that is forces in the game, interdependent. Yes, not linear. Karma is never linear. Karma is, there are forces created, and there's never just one force created by one action. There is a multiplicity of effects from a single action, and then other concomitant factors, they interact, and they change the effect. Changes the effect in our own mind, changes the effect in the other's mind. Incredible. So, multidimensional awareness means to be very fluid, very, you know, like also in our country, when we get the news about the war, then the news usually only give the terrific things. But then I have to make my students aware. Listen, at the same time when this is happening, there's an incredible compassion and taking care of each other. There is so much friendship, so much bonding. There's so much, you know, there's so much else happening, you know, concern for each other, fears and so on. Yes, all of that is happening. So you get the tip of the iceberg as the visual information, the auditory information, the textual information, but hey, this is not all of reality. The whole picture is so multi-layered. Yeah. And why do I talk to you about it? Because the ability to move in this multi-dimensional reality, this is what Mahamudra is about. Not to have a fixed view means to be able to enter all different views. Not to have a fixed opinion means able to understand different opinions, different ways of interpreting reality. And this is only possible if we open up to the whole of our existence. And it is so, so fine. It is our energy system. You know, we talked about this prana body, this pranakaya. This energy system, this subtle energy, is like an incredibly fine receptive field, and we feel so much more than what we find in the textbooks of medicine. Yes? So many more senses are there. It's incredible the subtleties that we can feel in every area of our experience. So, Mahamudra practice means to open up, because that is our wish as a bodhisattva, a bodhisattva, to open up to all aspects of reality, always being aware of the conditioning that is happening constantly, always being aware that within this conditioned field, there is a lot of subjective interpretation of reality. So always being aware that everyone lives in a different world. And that even the conditioning experience is also not the same. It's not a solid reality at all. All of this is very dynamic. And it's dynamic because it has this ungraspable of reality. So opening up to everything, with deep wisdom, with a deep intuitive knowing and feeling that all of this is the dance of phenomena. All of this is real, it's effective, it has effects, it changes the world. The world is changing, and the way we interact with the world changes it into a certain direction, definitely. This is never denied. And then we see that all of this is happening, and which world we experience depends on where our awareness stays. Yeah? So most of you feel you almost don't feel a choice because you feel like awareness stays in the suffering. Or it stays in the depressed mode of being, in the helpless feelings, but then, of course, fortunately, also it changes. Now, what I'm talking about is not only a choice to stay in either suffering or in happiness. It's not an either or. The bodhisattva mind, the Mahamudra mind, actually stays in all areas of reality simultaneously. That's very difficult to understand, especially if you have heard a teaching as if the mind could only be aware of one thing at a time. You know, that's a very limiting view of reality. It is only true for the focus, but there is so much going on. For example, as we focus on a visual object, it's not only the visual object that is part of awareness. We also don't fall down. We know exactly what to do in order to sit straight. This is happening. We are still aware of sound, so it's not even if it goes very rapidly, it would never explain how, while talking to a person, you can see the person's past life. You know, he has the present life, and you can see the past life of the person coming up behind, which is, for the Buddha, for example, is described as having multiplicities of past lives simultaneously appearing in his mind, not one after the other. Yes? So it's incredible. And I lived with a teacher where this was current, and not only one. A new Selvi teacher who could be in the awareness of the now and know the future of what was going to be the future happening of that person in front of them and predict that, and it would happen. Incredible capacities. So we are talking about opening the mind, heart, our awareness to such an extent, and without choosing so much, you know, in the beginning we choose in order to find our balance. But when the insight into this ungraspable quality of reality becomes strong, we don't need to choose so much anymore, because nothing stays. Nothing is like, it solidifies in this open mind. So we open up to all reality, whatever it is, and that is the same non-grasping understanding of the ungraspable nature, which permeates all of our experience. It's not a moment-to-moment-to-moment awareness, not at all. There are no moments in this awareness. There's only the flow of experience. You cannot find a separation between one experience and the next, because the so-called one experience and the next one, you don't know where's the end of one and the beginning of the others. They change into each other. Yeah, like it's not like a little bit of change, then a stop, and another change, and a stop, and then another change, and a stop. You know, it's not a staccato experience what we're having. It's not moment to moment. It's flowing on. It's flowing on. And that's why to talk about a dance of phenomena is much more applicable. So this dance of awareness is waiting for us. It is already happening now. But as we enter the so-called daily life, which is a more challenging version of our present daily life in retreat, more challenging from the outer senses point of view, then what we need is actually a very spacious, non-clinging attitude of not solidifying whatever comes along. And this is what we train in during retreat. We train in never solidifying any experience. Always being aware of this already now, this multidimensional being that is meditating, where no self can be found. But this being is nevertheless real. Okay? We don't leave our own reality at the entrance to Tovana together with our smartphone. We only leave the smartphone, and the multidimensional reality continues without a smartphone. Yes? So, still possible. Yes, a part of our identity has been dropped, a part of our preoccupations, but actually only for more of our true self, this dynamic, multidimensional, very sensitive stream of awareness, this emerges. It emerges better because we are not hooked so much on text messages, hearing messages, images, and so on. So the hooking process is not so much encouraged. And that means we can open more to this flowing awareness. And actually the teaching that I'm giving to you now is a combination of several teachings. Yeah, the ground teaching behind all of that is that what we call a human being has in itself the experiences of all realms of existence. In order to make that clear to us, the usual teaching is that we have already been reborn from the most hellish experience to the most heavenly experience. All of that is already behind us. Yes, it has already happened. And we come into this life with all the already lived experience of all these different realms of existence. That's the usual way in the Buddhist tradition to talk about, you know, who we are. We have lived it all. Another way to talk about that is we are living it now. We are still living it now. All the aspects of what we see in the world, what we experience in the world, whom we think that we have in front of us, whom we think that we are hearing about in the news, whom we remember, all of this is at the same time living in us. It's incredible, yeah? So we hear about a terrible situation, we hear about a happy situation. Whatever we experience at that moment, actually, because we are such sensitive beings, is as if it were happening in ourselves. I can only see the interest and the joy in your face because it's actually in myself. There is something resonating of that same nature. I can only see a Buddha because of the Buddha in myself. I can only see terror because of the terror in myself. Okay? I can only see love because of the love in myself. So actually right now, we are processing. We are processing all realms of existence all the time. And it has become very difficult in this modern world because we are overwhelmed with, we call it information, but actually we are, what is so-called information coming through the internet and the media, the TV and so on, so-called information are actually the tips of the icebergs of complete worlds of experience. And due to our sensitivity, we don't only receive the tips, we receive the message of what might be below the tip of the iceberg, which is above the conceptual level. Yeah, it's like, okay, this is what is conceptually received, but non-conceptually, we receive so much more resonance. And it is too much. It's too much for most people to receive that much stimulation of this body of resonance or body-mind resonance. Yeah. So one thing definitely is sometimes we need to be abstinent. We go to a protected place. We don't look into the news. We forget about it. We go into sane places, and this is where always nature comes in, because that's where we've actually, as human beings, we are most at home when we are in nature, because there, this body which is made of the five elements and the five elements outside, they are in a very, very beneficial resonance. And still, even that resonance with the nature, for an overburdened energy system can be too much. You know that, you know, when you have the chirping of the cigars and everything is just too loud. You know, like nature is too loud. And then nature becomes too cold, then nature becomes too hot, then it is like this and that, and too many mosquitoes, and too many, you know, already. It's like we don't have so much space in order to experience that. So we go into protected places at good times of the day and so on, we go into places where our energy system can actually relax, and what it does, it oscillates. It is still working as we go into those so-called relaxing spaces. We are not yet relaxed. There's so much still going on, and we need some time, dive in the water, you know, do some exercise, then complete sleep and calm again and eat well and all of, and out of the stimulating area. And we learn then to feel ourselves again, which in the overstimulation we didn't feel. So the daily meditation practice actually becomes the moment of the day when we can be in that zone of opening up and relaxing. But we never stop to be a multidimensional receptor, processor, you know, technical terms, actually a multidimensional, very sensitive energy body. We never stop. We cannot. We just cannot stop. When we try to block it, it's to our own disadvantage. Our heart closes, we become blocked, and with the time, we either become angry or depressed. We feel our capacity to love is diminishing, our capacity to listen is diminishing. You know, all of these beautiful capacities are becoming less. So blockage is no way out. It's only a short-term protection. Only opening is also no way out. It's a way into pain, right? It's like only opening is painful. So opening needs to go along with wisdom. Opening needs to go along with spaciousness, with fluidity. With seeing through the very nature of all of what's happening. And I love to use this play of words with seeing the ungraspable nature of what's happening, the grasping ceases. Like when we discovered as children that a rainbow cannot be grasped, then we stopped running after it. Ungraspable, insight into the ungraspable, no more grasping. So a beautiful way to talk about that increase of wisdom, of insight into the nature of reality, which allows us to feel again. But please don't try to be superwoman and superman. Please, I beg you, don't overburden yourself with information, with input, with stimulation. Choose it. Become clever in choosing where you go, where you open. Basically, we are opening to all the realms of existence. Basically, we open to samsara and nirvana, and they are co-emergent. This is the term we use in Mahamudra language. The co-emergent, co-arising nature of samsara and nirvana. And we will begin to see that while there is the reality of suffering, there is the reality of freedom. And they don't have to be played against each other. It's not that the reality of being in nirvana, of being in the awareness of the Buddha, of the Buddhas, then we wouldn't be noticing and touched by the suffering anymore. our receptivity becomes even greater. I think it is hard to imagine how sensitive a fully awakened being is. I think it's beyond our capacity because they don't need to protect themselves anymore. And if there's no more need for protection, that means that sensitivity is at the highest. With all the clairvoyances that go along and so on, you know, all of that additional information, that additional sensitivity is activated. It's an incredible sensitivity in a fully free mind that is not grasping. So that would be the path of the bodhisattva, yeah, or the bodhisattva, is to free the mind, to open up to all different dimensions of reality, and then in that resonance to do what is necessary. Okay? That's what actually the path of freedom would all include, yeah, this expanding of awareness, which means sensitivity plus wisdom. The sensitivity is called compassion, and the wisdom is insight and the ungraspable nature. Okay. So thank you very much for listening. Let's stay a while in silence. That is a 25-minute break. So we meet again at 10 to 11. And you can continue in silence here in the hall, walking meditation, whatever is good for you. We continue with simple meditation. The basics are always the same. We take a comfortable posture that allows for clarity. And we become the most normal human being. We were talking about opening the six senses, which is of course very, very helpful to feel ourselves truly present in the place where we are right now. And we open all the additional intuitive sensory capacities together with the spacious awareness where everything can arise in an unhindered continuity. Everything arises with the taste of its ungraspable nature. You don't have to add that taste. It already has that taste. And whatever little or big experiences appear, they are very vivid, as real as something that we can see in clear sunlight. And it has this taste. The flavor of uniqueness, as well as the taste of equality. Maybe you can touch into this simultaneous feeling of this world being a mess, complete mess, and at the same time a pure realm, without that the one denies the other. And with that and a little smile, I leave you in your world, which can be both, either or, none of it. See for yourself. sensitivity flowing, actually aware, to be aware is to be sensitive. These are not two different qualities. Let it flow, going everywhere, and be sensitive, not only to what it is, but also to how it is, the appearance and its very nature, its essence. And now I would like to explain to you the dedication prayer. Just a little explanation. I need one piece of paper with it written on. You look together with her as I explain. Oh, okay. Thank you so much. You know, these prayers, that wasn't planned. It was because I can't stop singing them. And then you asked for the meaning of what I was singing. And then Of course, then I offer it to you, and then I found, oh, it's a good idea if you can take them home, because some of you, you might want to connect with that, and you might want, you feel maybe that it's nice to sing like this, something that comes from an old lineage, you know, like, I don't know where all of them come from, and I know that the refuge bear, the first one, was coming to Tibet with Atisha, a great master of the 11th, 12th century. And Atisha was at the same time a Mahamudra master, completely awakened, and he was very careful to explain us, I would say, to all of us generations to come, very careful to explain the path of how to be a bodhisattva, you know, the Mahayana mind training, the 7 points of Lojong, if you have heard of that. He was wonderful in passing these instructions on. And he combined this view of complete freedom with the challenges of everyday life, the reality. So Atisha is the origin of this first prayer. The four immeasurables are probably much, much older. And I only know that the Guru Yoga, this version is written in the Mahamudra preliminaries. And the dedication prayer, I also don't know its origin. It's also used by so many teachers. And you see, the first one says, through these merits may all beings attain all awareness and defeat all harmful forces. May they be liberated from the ocean of becoming agitated by the waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. So merits means this positive force. It's the word sunam at the beginning. At the beginning of the prayer, you have sunam, which means positive energy, positive force. It's actually the effect, that which is created. For example, we meditated now, and there is some positiveness coming from that. And this effect of the wholesome action, this is called sunam. Punya, yeah, and so we always finish by offering whatever good there is and there was, and we imagine that it unites with all the positive forces in the universe. So that means it unites with all the dedications that have already been made. So we always think that our little bit of virtue, a little bit of positive effect, it unites with everything that practitioners, non-awakened and awakened, have offered, and also the virtue of all those who don't even think of dedicating. It connects with all of that, and it does contains a deep moment of appreciating that so many are contributing to the positive force in this universe. So we are just adding our little drop to the ocean of beneficial activity. So it's a humble way of dedicating. It's like being aware that these merits, these positive forces, join all the other ones. And so this, in a way, becomes an incredible positive force. And who we dedicate it to is always everybody. No exception. No exception going far beyond the human realm. and why we dedicate it, so that this all awareness, this is being like it opens up in every stream of being. Here in this prayer, it is in the first line, Tamche Zikpa, Tamche Zikpa, Sunandiyi, Tamche Zik, the all-seeing. Zik means to see, and Tamche means all. So that we see all aspects of reality. That's what it is dedicated to. To become all-seeing, all-aware. Yeah, so here translated as all-awareness. And then it says that this is also dedicated to the fact that we that we defeat all harmful forces. So these harmful forces, then, by the power of the positive, then all the ego-centered forces, all the malas. Have you heard of malas before? Some of you are nodding, you know. The clinging to the emotions, yeah? Identifying with the emotions, klesha mala, the identifying with the skandhas, with the aggregates, the processes of perceiving, feeling, differentiating, the formations, the creative forces, and the different states of consciousness, the skandha mala. Then we have the Devaputra mala, which is the clinging to sensory experiences, but especially the clinging to meditational states. So may also those obstructing forces be purified. And we have Mriti mala, which is the mala of death. But death is not the problem. It's our fear of death. It's the mala that appears whenever we become self-concerned because of a fear about ourselves. So these four, actually, they say always the same thing. It's like not really four different ones. Yeah, it's like four different ways the same problem can be explained. So these are called the so-called enemies. They are enemies because they rob our happiness. They are actually, mala means to kill. They kill our vitality. This means they are not very respectful. When we are happy, the clinging comes and off it goes. You know, it's like really not very nice. We did something good. The pride comes and the wholesome state of mind becomes very small because of the appropriation of that pride. Yeah, the pride seizing whatever quality manifested. We had a very nice open meditation experience and the desire comes to reproduce it. Oh, what a pity. We are not in the openness of the experience anymore. We already want more of that for the future. So actually that's the end of the meditation experience. It cannot continue because the grasping comes in. So this is called desire. And like this, you know, that's why they are called like this. Actually, they are creating a lot of dukkha. And that's why they're called here harmful forces. May they, all these tendencies, all these harmful forces, misunderstanding. May they, those beings, may the beings be liberated from the ocean of samsara. That's the shorthand here. The short meaning is, by the power of whatever positive is here, together with all the positive in the world, may everyone's Buddha nature be so much stimulated by this positive force that all the obstacles can be overcome, and then this ocean, which is agitated by the waves of, actually we could say, clinging to birth, old age, sickness and death, that this becomes pacified. So what does it mean? It means that actually we realize that there is no birth, no death for awakened mind. Yes, these are conditioned phenomena, and one entails the other. If you experience birth, all the rest will follow. All these conditioned phenomena are not what is being realized. We realize the unconditioned. Yeah, we realize that which is beyond all these very enormous sufferings which we have now. I have the suffering of old age. Yes, I don't look so old, but things are not as they used to be. Yes. So, yes, and I know some of you are far ahead in, you know, in that process. So I respect, I'm really grateful for everybody who is managing to come here and to sit in such a room and to receive the Dharma, you know, with all the challenges of such a body. But it can happen very early, can happen at a very young age. The challenges of illness and then, you know, whatever can follow are very, very big. And the solution is not to try to do awake with this. You know, the Buddha also went through all of that. All the awakened beings, they go through this. I've been the doctor of many masters. Yeah, when I was for these 21 years a monk in our monastery, then all the Tibetan masters that arrived, great names, big names, they always had some illnesses to be taken care of. They are not beyond just because their mind is so free. They are actually very sensitive beings, not taking good care of their body on top, you know, genetic predispositions, living in a culture and climate zone that is not theirs, and so on, you know. It heaps on heaps on heaps of challenges. So I know that the way to be liberated is not that this stops, but our reactions to it, that which is making it all so disagreeable, these, they are liberated. Okay, so we make a dedication for that. And then, of course, you can see if you want to be reborn or not, then there is also the possibility not to be reborn in such a situation anymore. So all of this is, I think it's pretty easy to understand. It's the next one, we don't know what it really means, maybe. Following the example of all bodhisattvas. Does it say I devote? It should be dedicate. Probably the auto-correction of the computer. It should mean I dedicate. Yeah, I dedicate everything wholesome with the wisdom like the heroes Manjushri and Samantabhadra. Sorry, I'm only seeing this now. I dedicate everything wholesome. So all bodhisattvas and bodhisattvas of all ages, they have the practice of dedication of merits. It's actually a twofold practice. And these examples here of Manjushri and Samantabhadra, they stand for a way, two ways, two aspects of this dedication. To dedicate like Manjushri means to dedicate with the deep understanding of the empty nature of the doer, of the act, and that what is dedicated to. Yeah? There is no such person as someone who dedicates. There is, in fact, not a dedication. There are not living beings, in fact, being dedicated to. So there is a deep understanding of, yes, it's real, but it is not solid. And when I try to find the one dedicating, only again, this open dynamic awareness, no one home. Yeah, this understanding. This is Manjushri. And Samantabhadra, he also had this understanding, but he is famous. We are now talking about the Bodhisattva Samantabhadra, not about the Buddha. They have the same name. The All Good One, Samantabhadra. That's the name. And Samantabhadra was having an incredible capacity to multiply the wholesome force, the offerings, limitlessly. His samadhi, the samadhi of Samantabhadra, is such that, for example, I give you, let's say we have offered a flower to the Buddhas. Yes, we have actually done this little act of imagining this flower is offered to the Buddhas, or is offered to all, is even offered to just one person. Yeah, like, okay, I offer to the Buddha in you, something like this. Now, Samantabhadra's samadhi was such that one flower becomes two flowers, becomes four flowers, becomes eight flowers, becomes like multiplying, until there is not one flower anymore, but all space, all Dharma Dhatu, the whole space of phenomena, the whole mind is only flowers. Okay? Limitless, countless flowers being dedicated. So the act of generosity by what it is being offered becomes limitless in quantity. Then, at the same time, imagining offering to one Buddha, two Buddhas, four Buddhas, eight Buddhas, 60, you know, always like this is how we train in it. We actually train in this on the Bodhisattva path to be able to visualize always greater, you know, objects of the generosity, which means those who receive, those who receive, always more, multiplying, and then all the Buddhas of the past, all the Buddhas of the present, all the Buddhas of the future, multiplying endlessly, no limit. So the whole Dhamma Dhatu is simultaneously filled with limitless Buddhas. And then at the same time, offering all of this to limitless beings. So far, so good. That wasn't all. Samantabhadra's meditation, samadhi, included that when he wouldn't think of the offerings multiplying anymore, they would continue multiplying. So his samadhi, his wishes, the strength of his samadhi included a kind of perpetuum mobile of the dedication process, of the offering process, so that the limitlessness of that offering doesn't shrink back to a zero when you stop thinking of it. But actually, when you make a Samantabhadra offering, a Samantabhadra dedication, you step out of the dedication with the feeling that the forces continue multiplying in the universe, even if we don't think about it anymore. Which to you and to me, when I heard of it first, thought like a genius, but like wishful thinking. But with the years, I contemplated this teaching that the bodhicitta continues producing merits even when we are asleep. So our motivation to be of complete service to the situations in our life, this motivation continues even when I'm not conscious. How is that possible? How is that possible? And then I noticed that when the bodhicitta was strong during the day, it would be strong during the dreams. It was changing the dreams. It was active without me generating bodhicitta. The bodhicitta attitude was active as soon as there was the least bit of consciousness. So obviously it was ready. It was ready all the time. It doesn't really stop. And then in deep sleep, in the luminosity experience of deep sleep, then the ultimate bodhicitta is there, is active. And so I begin to understand that the nature of mind is active all the time. It never stops. And if you understand that these dedications are actually dedicating with the understanding of the ongoing, dynamic, limitless nature of the four Brahma-viharas, that they never stop. They never stop. They are limitless, not only in quantity and, you know, the recipients and so on, but they are an ongoing natural attitude of the mind. Then you begin to understand how that can work with Samantabhadra's limitless ongoing generosity, limitless ongoing dedication. It's quite amazing. It's a Mahamudra, Bodhisattva, bodhicitta form of dedicating. So you see, first we need to understand the Manjushri way of dedicating, that it is, there's nothing substantial to it. And then we begin to feel, wow, this is actually what is naturally going on in a free mind. A free mind of, say, a Buddha, as someone absolutely not concerned with self-benefit, this free mind has no other activity than being in resonance and in a positive, creative resonance with the world. So bodhicitta is active all the time. The Buddha doesn't have to tell his mind to now please go into bodhicitta. It's what is naturally happening. Naturally happening in the union of that receptivity on the condition, the relative level, and the freedom of clinging to it, which is due to the presence of the ultimate level. So actually, this way of dedicating describes a free process of being where one's whole life is ongoing dana. It's nothing else. It's ongoing dana, ongoing generosity. All senses, all the way we hear it is dana, the way we see is dana, the way we feel is dana, the way we think is dana, the way we speak is dana. There's nothing which would be an exception to that. So I'm not there, you know, don't think that. But slowly, gradually, an understanding of that has crept into my mind. And when Gyanu Rinpoche and other teachers explained us this way to dedicate, they said, well, what we do is very clever. We say, right now, I'm not able to dedicate like this, but I can make the wish that may my dedication follow the example of these great bodhisattvas and be just like theirs, by their blessing, by the blessing of the nature of mind. May it be like this, even if consciously I definitely can't do it. Yes? So we join our, and this is the very skillful way of making our dedication limitless, even when we have a very limited understanding, just by trusting that others know how to do it, then may this dedication follow that example. And then the third prayer here, the third dedication is, through the blessing of the Buddha who has realized the three bodies, through the blessing of the unchanging truths of the nature of all phenomena, and through the blessing of the undivided aspiration of the noble community, may this dedication be fulfilled just as wished. So, long sentence, may this dedication be fulfilled just as wished. And we invite for that, so to make it a dedication that doesn't come from a me, you know, not like I have to become like a generator sending out now this dedication into the world and giving it all the power to, you know, like this would be a very dualistic dedication, like thinking that I have to become a big generator of love and, you know, but we simply invite the blessing. And we invite the blessing into this dedication of that dimension, which we call Buddha Dharma Sangha. Now, Buddha here is described as the three bodies, Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nyanmanakaya, the body of truth, the body of joy, and the body of manifestation or emanation, the emanation body. And this to see the Buddha's blessing as coming from the dimension of joy, or the dimension of truth, the dimension of joyful interaction with the world, and the dimension of compassionate manifestation in the world. That's the meaning. Huh? The body Dharmakaya means the dimension of open awareness. Sambhogakaya means joyful interaction with the world, with all universes. It's that creativity and dynamic aspect of the mind. And Nyanmanakaya means compassionate manifestation in the world. So to see Buddha as these three kayas, actually to my teacher was absolutely important. I didn't talk about that yesterday, but he wouldn't miss, whenever he was giving a refuge ceremony, he would talk about these three kayas. No one understood, but for him it was the most important thing to say, please understand Buddha, when you take refuge in the Buddha, as these three kayas. So today I can explain it to you, but yesterday was too much. Yeah, so by the blessing of that threefold, you can say, Buddha awareness, and through the blessing of the unchanging truths of the Dharmata, nature of phenomena, nature of all phenomena is a translation of the word Dharmata. In Tibetan, Chöni, if you search for it. But Dharmata means phenomena as they are, the nature of phenomena. The ta at the end means as it is. So the as it isness, the suchness of phenomena. So again, we invite, when we think of the blessing of the Dharma, here we go to not the Dharma of the words. We go to the realization that the blessing is inherent in the nature of phenomena. That's the blessing we invite for the dedication. And then the last blessing we invite is the blessing of the Sangha, the undivided aspiration of the noble community. Noble community is the Sangha of the noble ones. And the undivided aspiration is the most important aspect of Sangha. Sangha division, sectarian attitudes within the Sangha, they create a lot of disharmony, a lot of striving. end. So the undivided aspiration of the Sangha always going into ultimate truth, into the ultimate liberation. This undivided aspiration to realize that truth and to serve all sentient beings. That is what is called the undivided aspiration. And no one can get any division in there. This is where the Sangha is united, you know. So we ask the blessing of that, can say, undivided friendship and undivided aspiration. So through that, may the dedication really then work, and then we have nothing else to do but to sit in being nobody. The work is done, whatever meditation was there is done, the dedication is done. They take care, so to speak, the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and reality take care, and you know, so kind of the dedication is made, but it is delegated to that dimension which is beyond the self, and the self has actually really nothing to do. And so we just sit in as natural a space as possible. Okay, that was explanation of the dedication prayers, and now we do them together, and then the rest, the remaining hour until lunch, is again yours. Sunam de yin tan je zing panin top ne nim pen janam pan chen kenga na tim balam tum paye si pe tso le jova jova so jambe bhavun chita kempadang kuntu sampo deyan deshinte deda kunjin jesu dat lonjin gewan deda tamje dam tumo sangye kusum nimpen jen lamdang Chene menju dem pejen lamdan, gende menche dem pejen lamji, jitang owa man lam jom